This is your friendly neighborhood author, Jonathan, and you are listening to Season 5 of the Floor Rejects podcast, The Isle of Artemisia. Welcome back to the Floor Rejects podcast. This is your friendly neighborhood author, Jonathan, bringing to you another chapter of The Isle of Artemisia. If you're new here, or if you just missed last week, every week of the podcast, I bring you a new chapter of a story I'm writing. Last week was chapter 14, I believe, of The Isle of Artemisia, in which Anaxos dug up the magical plant that causes everyone to survive forever on this island. Kind of did a scorched earth thing, hid the plant, what was left of it, on the island somewhere, and then went to the others who've been terrorizing Anaxos, Barret, and his group of friends since Barret and his group of friends got on the water, went to the others and struck up a deal with them. And that deal basically guaranteed that everyone could go back to the beach and try and get home, and the others wouldn't bother them, at least until Anaxos was by himself again. And Barret's not very happy with that idea, but Anaxos seems pretty intent on it. So let's see what happens in chapter 15 of this story. Chapter 15, Backtrack. Back to the beach, Anaxos yells as he walks back into the clearing that houses the cave. Daniel, Crystal, and Nick look up to him. They all look at him with varying emotions. Crystal looks borderline bored, her face lineless and unconcerned. Daniel has a hopeful look in his eye. Nick, well, his face is unreadable, his body language untrustworthy to the two who emerge from the forest. He stands first, helping Crystal up, and all three of them walk to Anaxos, who is squatted at the river, washing his hands of the dirt he'd gotten on them as he buried the plant. Why? Crystal asks dully. Anaxos looks at her carefully, his thoughts running across his face, but he doesn't say what he's thinking. Because you want to go home, yes? He asks. She nods. Then you need to be near the water, he says, and the other three nod in general agreement after looking at each other. Let's go, Barret says to Anaxos, who begins leading the way back to the hut with vigor. He has a bounce in his step, and that was encouraging to see for Barret, but still at the back of his mind it lingered, the worry for his new friend. Anaxos, do you think I could ask you something? Barret asks him, jogging up to the head of the group, leaving the others far enough behind so they couldn't hear. Anaxos nods. Why are you so intent on getting us back? He asks. Anaxos is quiet for a moment, and only the sound of crunching leaves can be heard. Then he speaks. I want you to go home. I miss my home. I miss my family. I do not want that to happen to you. You do not deserve it, he says. And Barret nods. Of course, this made sense to Barret, who had been so consumed by everything around them that he hadn't even thought of everything he'd left behind. He'd been so focused on being terrified at first and then focused on getting his friends back that he hadn't remembered that he had a family missing him at home, that there was a cat back home that was missing him, and that if he didn't get home soon, the world would move on without any of them. He turns to look at his friends and wonders if there was a way that they could get back. He hadn't seen a boat or a plane or any sign of life beyond the isle since he arrived, and as much as he hated to admit it, even to himself, his hope was beginning to dwindle as they drew close to the beach. The trees around them felt as if they would swallow him up with the depth of their foliage, and when finally they emerge out onto the warm sands, out from under the cool canopy, Barret's almost despondent. As his friends pop out of the woods behind him, he can finally understand why Crystal was constantly on a downward slide. She was coming to the same realization that he was. She just got there first. He pulls her aside as Nick goes to sit in the surf and Anaxos takes Daniel back to the woods in search of something. Hey, can we talk? He asks her. She nods, following him to sit in the dark, warm hut. I think I get it. I get why you're so down, Barret says, and Crystal seems to hold back a laugh. What is it that's bothering me, Barret? She asks him, and he takes her hands in his. It's because we're getting farther and farther from home, right? You're worried we won't get there? He asks, and she smiles at him. He returns it. No, Barret, at least I wasn't worried about that until now. I'm off my meds. They're out of my system and it's fucking with me, she says, and it clicks for Barret. He hadn't even thought about it. It hadn't occurred to him that he didn't have his anxiety meds, but he also hadn't considered that the others were facing the same thing. He looks at her for the first time in a new light, and he giggles. "Oh, well, that makes more sense. I wish I'd thought of that," he says, and she slaps his hands away playfully, and he giggles again. She smiles more genuinely. "I know it's a lot, but I can't really help it. I'm going through withdrawals, and it's really messing with my head. Nick's been helping me through it. He really gets me, you know?" she says, and Barrett stares at the sandy hut floor. He contemplates passing on Anaxos's warning, but he doesn't. He doesn't want to cause more divisiveness, and so he just pats Crystal's hands and takes himself out of the equation, leaving her to sit in the hut while he goes out to the beach to stand with his feet in the sand and his face in the sun. He steps to the water's edge and lets the water roll over the tops of his feet, enjoying the sensation of the pleasantly warm water rushing around his ankles. He smiles to himself now, happy to be alive, not in fear for his life, and surrounded by people he had worried about for the past few days. "You like the ocean, no?" Crystal, his friend Nick asks quietly. Barrett opens his eyes, taking a deep, salty breath. "No. I wish I'd never agreed to go with you on this stupid trip," Barrett says, shocked at his own honesty. He turns to apologize, but Nick has a crooked, endearing grin on his face. "Tell me how you feel really," Nick says, and Barrett laughs, his eyes tearing up. He was tired. It was hitting him how tired, hungry, and pissed off he was. He turns to Nick, and the man's face brightens up. "You are tired. Take a rest," he says, clapping a hand on Barrett's sagging shoulder. Barrett nods, knowing he should, and so he goes back into the hut, smiling at Crystal and flopping down on the free bed. He curls up, his mind swirling. He shuts his eyes and suddenly everything is quiet. His mind, the surroundings, his breathing, everything slows and stills. He sleeps for a long time until night falls on the little group, all of them together on the beach. As he sleeps, Anaxos and Daniel return with bushels of leaves, branches, and beach grass. Anaxos, with Daniel as his assistant, crafts three more beds to the ones that he had made for Barrett and for himself, so no one had to sleep on the sand and risk getting fleas. Nobody wakes Barrett for dinner. Instead, the group opts to eat in tenuous silence, Barrett only waking when the other three settle into sleep on their newly made cots. Anaxos is not with them, though, and Barrett gets up after a few minutes. He gets up and walks out onto the beach, now cooler as the sun had set. He doesn't see anyone at first, but does spot a fish that had been cooked, likely for him, stuck on a stick in the sand near the fire, which still crackles. He tears into it voraciously and finds that his eyes are adjusting to the dark. The sun's last dying rays of day shine from the horizon, and as he looks out, he spots a figure standing out in the water a ways down from the beach that he sat at. He watches, at first terrified that it was one of the others, but then realizes that it was Anaxos. The man was again nude, turned towards the sea, washing himself. Barrett turns away, putting his back to Anaxos, and eats his fish quietly, trying to ignore what he'd just seen, even though his pants were growing tighter by the second. As he finishes the last of the food and throws it into the ocean, he hears the sliding sound of footsteps in the sand. He turns and Anaxos is walking towards him, his pants pulled low around his hips, dark hair peeking out over the edge of his pants. "I saved one for you," Anaxos says, lacing his pants back up as he walks into the fire's light and sits down across from Barrett. In the dim glow, without fear gnawing at his mind, Barrett is caught up in the man's orbit. He was wet, glistening in the warm light. His hair shone, running down his chest, which was covered in dense black hair that stuck to him. His beard was dripping wet, and when he smiles, Barrett can't help but smile back. Anaxos was one of the most beautiful men that he'd seen in a long time. He possessed an unawareness of how he looked, likely attained from being stuck on the island for so long. Barrett fights the urge to draw closer to the man, to touch him or say something suggestive, and instead looks out to the water, and suddenly he leaps up into the air. "A boat!" he shrieks. Okay, what do I like about this chapter? I like that something gets done. I like that, contrary to the past couple of chapters, something happens. They move. They go back to the beach. I like that. I thought it was starting to get a little stale being stuck at the cave and just kind of waiting around to see what was going to happen. And I like that instead of this chapter just dropping off at Barrett falls asleep, or Barrett sits next to the fire, or Barrett does something calm, and that kind of rounds out the chapter. It's rounded out with a cliffhanger. It's rounded out by him spotting a boat out in the distance. I think that adds a sense of excitement, of wanting to turn the page and read that next chapter, I think. I mean, compared to the last few chapters, I do think that it adds a little bit of something to it. I like that Anaxos gives Barrett a reason as to why he wants them to leave. And it's a sincere reason, and it kind of humanizes him a little bit. He misses his family, he misses his friends, he misses the life that he had before he got stuck on this stupid island. And Barrett accepts that answer because it makes sense to him. He hadn't thought about it. And I tried to put myself in the mindset of people who were in this constant state of panic and terror for several days. And if it was me, and maybe this is bad, or maybe it's just kind of because I've never experienced that, I'm not accurate in that sense, I would be so concerned for the people immediately around me in danger, and so concerned about surviving, that I don't think I would stop to consider at first that there were people who were missing me, that there were people who were sad that I was going to be gone, or that like my cats needed food. Like, that wouldn't be something that immediately occurred to me. My first thoughts would be prioritizing surviving the night, surviving a shipwreck, surviving a storm. And then it would be finding the people that are missing that I need to get back. So I feel like that was pretty accurate, or hopefully accurate, to kind of what I would think in that situation. Something that I think worked but didn't work flawlessly was kind of the end of the chapter, where Barrett is noticing how attractive he finds Anaxos. It's interesting because he's kind of remarked on it in his thoughts before, that Anaxos is very attractive, that he's good looking, or that he catches Barrett's eye. But not that it seemed forced, it just seemed kind of out of the blue that Barrett is suddenly finding himself attractive. I guess it's not. It's really not. I mean, when do you start being attracted to a person if not when they're soaking wet, glistening, looking beautiful in firelight on a beach with their pants hanging down? You know what I mean? When else are you going to find someone attractive if not then? But it just kind of feels weird to transition them from like these brand new people who've just barely met and are finding themselves as unlikely friends, to now Barrett is starting to kind of notice Anaxos and notice that he's very attractive, and that there's this like magnanimous quality about him that makes him so attractive. But I still do like that. I think it works for this chapter. As far as things I don't like, just the standard stuff. You know, I'm working on getting better at not repeating words. I think I am getting better at that, at not repeating the same words over and over again. Working on being more inspired in my chapters and making things happen instead of just writing the same thing chapter after chapter, because my brain is so fried that I just can't write anything else. I think that's good. And I think I'm doing better at that. I won't say I'm doing like perfect at that, but I am trying to find little spaces to write instead of making myself write everything all at once, or everything over one day, or everything over 2 days. Just kind of giving myself the space to be creative when the creativity strikes. And I'm looking forward to kind of getting this story back onto the track that it was originally on before my brain just like got hit by a bus and went sideways and completely derailed the outline that I had. And that, unfortunately, is just, it's just part of it. I mean, I think if I was sitting thinking the other day, and if I was a full-time writer, which isn't that the dream? If I was a full-time writer, then I would have the time to sit and get my creativity kind of up and running and ready and working. And I'm sure at some points I would hit writer's block, or I would be frustrated or have the feelings of self-doubt that I have anyways. But I do think that it comes down to time and energy. And if you don't have the time and energy to put into something, then it suffers. And I do think that this story has suffered from just a complete lack of energy and creativity that I haven't had. And I haven't had the mindset to be able to go back and focus on things like I wish I could. But I'm still trying. I am. I'm still trying every week to put that creativity in. And I don't want to say force myself, because that's not what I set out to do. It was never to force myself to do something, but to give myself that space to be creative every week, even if it was just for an hour or two. I wanted to give myself that, and I'm trying to maintain that and put in the 10,000 hours of work it takes to become a genius at something, to become a master of a craft. They say you need 10,000 hours, and I'm trying to get myself to that 10,000 hours. I'm a far ways off, you know. I'm no great next American author. I know that, and I'm okay with that. I want to be better at storytelling. I want to be better at writing. I want to be better at being creative, and I need to put that time in for myself. And that's something I'm still working on. So I guess until next week, or when I come back. I'm still kind of toying around with the idea of changing the schedule of the podcast to give myself more time every week or every 2 weeks or whenever I decide to do it, to kind of bank up creativity and bank up the energy that I need to write a chapter and write it well and give it the attention and the time that it needs. So I'll be back hopefully next week with a new chapter. I'll be back next week with a new chapter. I'll let you know ahead of time when I decide to change the schedule. But with a new chapter of this story, hopefully a good one, hopefully one where something happens. But until then, I've been your friendly neighborhood author, Jonathan, and this has been another chapter of The Isle of Artemisia. Bye.